Let us just put this to rest once and for all, shall we? This economy, the virus is still in charge. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 8th of October. I do believe good as always to have you along, everybody. So look, I'll tell you what. You take all your forecasts and your estimates and your analysts' reports, and I will take the Delta variant. And let us just see which side has a better handle on where this economy's going, shall we? Yeah, go ahead. I'll wait. Because it's the virus. Look no farther than this morning's uh-oh of a jobs report. 194,000 new jobs last month, not even within shouting distance of even the best guesses. So that is where we start. Catherine Rempel's at the Washington Post. Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai. Hey, Kai.
So, Catherine, we begin with you. Challenge the premise. The virus is in charge, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think there were all of these hopes that we would have much stronger job growth in September because of a few different things, right? Schools were reopening, which meant that there were fewer impediments for parents who wanted to return to work, in theory. Also, the expiration of the federal unemployment insurance supplements, which may have been keeping at least some workers on the sidelines. And instead, of course, we got the Delta variant. Delta variant had other plans. And, you know, we had much slower growth, partly because there were actually job losses in the healthcare sector as people delayed elective procedures and such. And a number of facilities have had trouble hiring. Childcare issues continue to be a problem, et cetera. So, virus is in charge.
So, Lynette, let me ask you this, though, because last month when we came in at, I think it was 235,000 new jobs, everybody said, oh, no, it's just a blip. Wait until September. It's going to be fine. Here we are in September. And what?
I think we're finding it's a lot harder to iron out the wrinkles of this messy, messy, messy economy than we thought. First of all, sometimes it feels like this whole economy is a game of Sim City that has gone very, very wrong. Like Hurricane Ida was also a factor in the jobs report, slowing things down. I think caretakers are really important. The fact that a lot of women who generally lead recoveries and show you how well recovery is going, they didn't add a lot of jobs this month, shows you that women are still staying at home, taking care of their families. And, you know, a lot of kids are getting sent home from school. So this is still a splotchy school, soft school thing going on. And one thing we're not talking about enough in the U.S. is the energy crisis in China, which is starting to affect supply chains. And people don't think that's going to get cleared up until March. So the noisy messiness and the slowness of this economy is going to continue, I think, longer than people expected.
Catherine, one more thing on jobs. We went through the report this morning, and the phrase unchanged or little changed was like in 15 places in their narrative summary this morning from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That would suggest we're a tad bit stuck.
Yeah. Again, there were hopes of stronger growth. There were some areas where there were job losses, but even in the areas where there were job gains, the gains were not that impressive. For example, in leisure and hospitality, that industry added jobs, but at a much slower pace than had been the case before. And that industry is deeply, deeply in the hole. You know, that's hotels, restaurants, bars, etc. So these hopes that we would finally dig our way out of this hole just aren't materializing. We're moving forward, but much too slowly.
Lynette,
Part of those hopes are hinged on the idea that the unemployment benefits running out in September would spur a lot of people to go back to the labor market, and that just didn't happen. So I think that's why people made big,
Right. Well, Lynette, keep going, right? Because part of what happened here is with the unemployment rate falling to 4.8%, people just left the labor market, right? They're just done.
They just stopped looking for jobs, which is the last thing we want. Because Heather Long, Catherine's colleague at the Washington Post, wrote a really great article about why people aren't finding jobs. And part of her article was the fact that a lot of these algorithms on sites like Monster and stuff look to see if you've been out of the job market for more than 6 months, or you haven't had a job in six months. And that's, in this situation, not a great thing for people. Some people have been out of work since the beginning of the pandemic, and that's not their fault.
Yeah. Catherine, we're gonna revise the rules on my favorite game show, What is Jay Powell Thinking? Take all the words you need, so long as it doesn't run more than like 45 seconds. Where does this job report put us in the Fed's guidelines of they need to see substantial further progress in this economy before they start doing things?
Well, Powell had said at the after the September meeting that basically we have met the threshold for substantial further progress on inflation, and that we still had some ways to go on jobs. But I think he said something like it wouldn't take a knockout report. It wouldn't take a super strong employment report, something like that, to discourage the likelihood of tapering by their next meeting. So this was definitely not a knockout report, but I think, given other indicators suggesting that there is some tightness in the labor market right now, job vacancies, wage growth, et cetera, I think we are still likely on track to see the Fed start tapering pretty soon. Hmm. Now, whether they start raising interest rates is a totally separate question, and that still seems a long way away.
Yeah, Catherine, what do you think? And I mean, sorry, Lynette, what do you think? And good point, Catherine, to separate the whole taper from the raising interest rates thing. But substantial further progress, Lynette, discuss. You got 45 seconds.
I think that we're going to have to continue. We're going to have to taper at some point. This market is super, super hot, and inflation, you know, we're starting to see that. I don't think this is going to knock the Fed off track. I think that they're flexible, but we're going to taper.
All right. Fair enough. I want to go super, super quickly, Catherine, to this global minimum tax that Janet Yellen and the OECD announced today. It leaked yesterday afternoon. This is a big deal. Global minimum tax of 15%. Explain it.
Well, there are a couple of things that we need to do. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yes, that this agreement was reached. Not everybody thought it would happen, but it's not a done deal in the sense that basically every country will have to go back to its parliament or whoever is setting the tax laws and make a bunch of changes. And some of those will be easier to make than others, including in the U.S. Congress will probably be able to raise the tax that U.S. companies pay on foreign profits to 15% pretty easily on its own. Democrats can do that with a party line vote. But there are some other changes that were agreed to about whether companies pay taxes where their goods or services are sold, or, you know, even if they have no physical presence there. And that may require a treaty deal, which would require 2/3 of the Senate. So a bigger hurdle.
Fair enough. Catherine Pell at The Washington Post, wrapping up a really complicated policy thing in 40 seconds. Thank you, Catherine. Lynette Lopez, also, she's at Business Insider. Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Guy. Bye.
Bye. On Wall Street today, a whole lot of bouncing around, actually, not a whole lot of change. Details, numbers, y'all know what we do. You get a jobs report like we got today. 7 minutes and 15 seconds ain't going to do it. So we are going to dig a little bit deeper on one slice of the unemployment report, wages. Hourly wages ticked up again last month, 6 months in a row, by the way, that's happened. It is a reflection of the labor shortage, of course, as Catherine was talking about. A commodity in short supply will get more expensive. And that's good news for frontline workers at restaurants and hotels and retail in particular. But while low-income employees might be seeing slightly bigger paychecks, they are also having to spend slightly more in this economy. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has that one.
The average wage for leisure and hospitality workers was nearly $19 an hour in September. To the penny, it's $1.85 more than last year. That's a good sign, says Andrew Stettner at the Century Foundation.
You know, these have been the jobs with the lowest pay, the fewest benefits, the least reliable schedules in our economy.
Stettner says workers can now demand even more from employers like McDonald's and Walmart.
You know, those employers are having to step up their game if they want to attract workers.
In Portland, Oregon, Angel Teresa works the front desk at McMenamin's Crystal Hotel. She got a $2 hourly raise a couple of months ago when she moved into that job.
I was absolutely thrilled because it was just like, oh my gosh, I can maybe like afford to eat now.
Before, she visited food banks for groceries and was a couple of months behind on her electric bill. So the raise is a help.
Definitely allows me to like catch up on my bills and whatnot.
But can that kind of a raise keep pace with the rising cost of gas and groceries? Inflation can cancel out bigger paychecks, says Laura Veldkamp, professor of finance at Columbia Business School.
These workers who are getting higher wages now may be getting more dollars, but they won't be able to buy more with it.
And Veldkamp says it's not yet clear whether these elevated wages are here to stay. That depends on whether all the workers who left the labor force during the pandemic decide to jump back in. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
About 4 months ago, I did an interview with a CEO about her supply chain problems.
We cannot get container space on the vessels, and we're constantly getting price increases. Every day, it's a different problem.
India Hines is the CEO of Vinotemp. They import wine coolers and outdoor refrigerators, a bunch of other appliances from China. And those problems she was having, they're worse now. So here's what I'm going to do a little mock shopping trip to Vinotemp.com.
Okay.
I'm looking at a garage 300 bottle dual zone wine cooler, left hinge, which is for sale for $3,399 and a $625 shipping cost. But then right below that, it says this item is currently out of stock.
Yes. Yes.
How big a problem is that for you as the woman trying to sell this particular piece of equipment?
It's pretty bad because that particular unit is one of our top 10 models, and not having it is, I mean, I look at the daily sales and it's significantly hurting our daily batches.
Why is it out of stock?
Out of stock because the factory has several containers waiting to ship and they cannot get space on vessels. Or if they do get space, if we basically pay a really like $19,000, $20,000 a container, they will try and find space, but still no guarantees.
That doesn't sound very promising. Give us $19,000 and we'll try to find space?
Pretty much, yes. That's how it works.
So what do you do? Seriously, what do?
Well, we have about 25 containers waiting now to ship. The products that are the hot selling ones are the ones that we're, you know, pushing out. If there's a spot here or a spot there, they're getting those spots if they don't get canceled, because sometimes we'll book those containers and then we'll get a call that it's been, we can't get it for whatever reason. Either they gave it to somebody else, maybe somebody else who's paying more money for it. So it's a tough situation right now to just get, there's nothing I can do really.
Are you raising prices at all?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
When was the last time you actually got a container from China? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get dribs and drabs. So we got one in yesterday for a product we've been out of stock for a month. And I'm not sure when the next one's coming in. So, and I heard it's not getting any better anytime soon. We've got containers at the port. That's now bottlenecked and causing an extra 3 week delay because containers aren't unloaded at the port level.
Right.
And then on that note, the factories are hesitant to produce because they've got containers that are stuck in their facilities.
Is this driving you at all to consider another source for your manufacturing? I mean, would you onshore it? Would you go somewhere else? Or does that just not make economic business model sense for you?
It's funny you say that because one of my biggest customers asked me, can you start making these wine coolers in the U.S.? However, all the components come from overseas. So we do some manufacturing in Vegas. The components come from different parts and a lot of them from overseas. So we're still in that situation, even with the stuff we assemble in the U.S.
So you just have to ride this out. Is that the deal?
Yep.
India Hines there, the CEO of Vinotemp. Those bottlenecks she was talking about are changing what you can buy, when you can get what you buy, and how much you are going to pay for what you buy. So we're launching a new series next week. We're calling it Temporarily Unavailable, How Stuff Gets Around the World. And the first stop on Monday.
Roger, Costco and Nagoya entering the precautionary area from the west, master on the bridge and vessel in hand steering. You're inbound for Hotel Bravo 8 Anchorage.
Traffic control at the biggest container port complex in the country. Coming up.
There's a lot of money to be made in green.
Yeah, going green ain't going so great for some, though. First, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 8 today, basically flat, 34,746. The NASDAQ down 74 points, about a half percent, 14,579. The S&P 500 also down 8, about a tenth percent there, 43.91. For this volatile week, the Dow added 1.2%. NASDAQ was essentially unchanged after all the bouncing around it did. The S&P 500 up 0.7%. Google has announced it's going to block ads that appear next to content promoting false claims about climate change. That policy also applies, by the way, to YouTube. So today, parent company Alphabet typed up 0.4%. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note up to 1.61%. Hello, Jay Powell. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The television watching audience falls into one of two camps right now. Those who've seen Squid Game and those who have not. I personally am in camp number two. The dystopian Korean drama is said to be on its way to becoming Netflix's biggest show yet, and that's even with only having been streaming for less than a month. So Marketplace's Kristen Schwab takes a look at why this show in particular, but increasingly Korean films and television in general, are resonating with American audiences.
In Squid Game, hundreds of people with huge sums of debt are invited to compete over an even bigger cash prize. What they soon find out is the only way to win and survive is to play games like Red Light, Green Light. The game we played as kids, says one of the characters, not exactly. This version has a much darker ending. Sookyoung Kim researches East Asian culture at UCLA's School of Theater, Film, and Television. She credits the show's success to its unique storytelling and high production values, and to its exploration of class.
It's a story of people who are desperate financially and psychologically, and it's something that we can all relate to, especially having gone through this extended period of pandemic.
She says, though the themes are universal, much about the show is characteristically Korean, like narratives exploring the idea of individual interest versus community. And there's specifically Korean nostalgia. One scene involves a game with dalgona, a honeycomb candy.
I think we're going to see more and more of those shows just sort of show up with the sort of cultural ties they have.
Neil Macker, a media analyst at Morningstar, says U.S. audiences are increasingly interested in foreign films instead of films from abroad remade into digestible American hits. That's great for Netflix. Two birds, one stone.
Netflix, Disney Plus, and Amazon are all, you know, fighting for subscribers worldwide.
So far, Netflix has made 80 Korean shows and films. Disney Plus launches in South Korea next month. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This will come as news to exactly none of you, but we've got a climate crisis right now that threatens basically everything up to and including humanity. To avoid its worst effects, assuming that is still possible, we need to get off fossil fuels and onto renewables that can power our electric cars and our electric buses and buildings and the whole rest of the grid. And that is going to take batteries. And almost all of those batteries use lithium, a metal that is reasonably abundant, but mostly untapped as of yet. So there's a whole new gold rush out to find it and extract it and make billions of dollars in the process. Our new podcast, it's called How We Survive, is all about solutions to the climate crisis, the business and the human stories of that huge new market. It's hosted by Molly Wood.
I'm up in northern Nevada, in a crescent-shaped mountain pass not too far from the Oregon border, in a place called Thacker Pass. It's home to a community of ranchers, farmers, and the Paiute Shoshone tribe. It's also home to the largest known supply of lithium in the U.S. and a proposed lithium mine, something that Duranda Hinkey has concerns about.
Hey, what about us? You know, what do our voices count? We just don't think that jobs is worth the destruction of this land.
Duranda is a Paiute Shoshone tribal member from the nearby Fort McDermitt Reservation. I met her at a protest camp set up near the proposed mine site. She says this land is sacred to the Paiute Shoshone, and people showing up to the protest camp are fighting to protect it.
Our non-native allies, they come here and they're, you know, really looking to save the land. They're looking to maybe stop lithium.
The company, Lithium Nevada, has been planning this mine for almost a decade.
I've worked in the mining industry my entire career, for 25 years. This is a very responsible project.
That's Tim Crowley, the vice president of government and community relations for the company. I met up with him in a little office park in Reno, where he gave me a tour of Lithium Nevada's lab. In this lab, they're testing out a new way to extract the lithium from the clay. Tim told us the reason the project is so responsible is because they're going to recycle the water it uses, and the mine will eventually be carbon neutral by relying on renewable energy. Plus, they'll restore the land that's dug up.
We're able to put the environment back into a condition for the same kind of uses that are there today. Recreation, hunting, hiking, all of that will return to that area someday.
Last year, the Trump administration fast-tracked the approval for the mine, and the company is hoping to break ground early next year. But Duranda says extracting more resources from the land is not the way to save the planet.
I wish that our society would look at lithium as not like the future, because I feel as if this lithium mine goes through, the next lithium mine is going to go through, and next one, and where are those going to be? You know, how much water is it going to take?
But what's happening at Thacker Pass is complicated. Lithium Nevada told me that so far, at least 40 people from the 300-person reservation have applied for jobs at the mine. And I've spoken with tribal members who expressed a lot of support for the project. There are also ranchers and farmers in the nearby community of Orvada who have conflicted feelings, like alfalfa farmer Wendelin Muratori.
It's just like people have lost their common sense in some areas in trying to save the planet, but I'm not so sure they're saving anything.
Yeah.
They're making a lot of people rich. I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in green.
But other farmers in the community feel like opposing the mine outright isn't going to help.
I don't know if this can be stopped. I hope that it can be stopped, but we have to deal with the reality that it might not be.
That's Gina Amato, another farmer in the area. I talked to her during a hailstorm outside of Orvada's elementary school, which is a few miles from the mine site. Gina has been leading community meetings with Lithium Nevada, trying to get them to make some investments in the community. So far, the company has committed to building a new school.
You see how close we are to the road.
Yeah.
So if this is the route that Lithium Nevada will use to transport all their materials in and out from the mine, we would like to see the school relocated.
But like I said, all of this is complicated. Here's this lithium mine that really could supply enough lithium to help electrify millions of cars, buses, trucks, power grids, even buildings and houses. That's a transition that would dramatically decrease our use of fossil fuels as we hurtle toward a level of warming that could easily wipe out almost all of us. But the people who are used to sacrificing are sick of it. And the ones who don't usually have to really don't want to.
And of course, the other argument for the mine, in a weird way, is climate change, right? Where do you fall on that part of it?
At what cost are we the sacrifice for that cost? And where I fall on that is I'm not willing to bear that burden.
Since last year, several lawsuits have been filed to try to stop the Lithium Nevada mine by environmental groups, a coalition of indigenous communities, and a local rancher. And members of the Biden administration have expressed concern that the project might be trampling the rights of the people in the area. I'm Molly Wood for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, one more item from the jobs report, and in keeping with the policy of this program that if we stop talking about this stuff, we are going to stop talking about this stuff. The overall unemployment rate, as you know, because we talked about it up top, down to 4.8%. The black unemployment rate in this economy down as well, from 8.8% to 7.9%. An improvement, yes, but part of that is for the same reason the overall rate fell. Black Americans just leaving the workforce. All right, we got to go. No moment of economic context today. I talk too much. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Our executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the brand new vice president and general manager around here. And a word about a woman whose name used to be in these Friday credits. Sitar Nieves was in charge of this program for 5 years before she moved over to build Marketplace Studios, what we call the podcast and on-demand work that we do. And she is leaving today. It's time, she says, to do something else. So from literally everybody here, thanks for everything. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. We will see you on Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.